Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Marcus Marrett, and welcome to the Beautifully Designed Game podcast brought to you by These Football Times. On this show, you will hear from some of the most well-renowned and talented artists practicing in the football creative world. And we are very happy to start off this first episode with the man who I personally consider to be the greatest fine artist practicing today, and that is Phil Galloway. Phil, nice for you to join us today.
Nice to see you, Marcus. Yeah, that was a hell of an intro there.
Well,
I've got a lot to live up to there now.
Celebrating talent. So, Phil, again, thank you for joining us today. So, what we will be spending this podcast doing is essentially handing over the microphone to your good self.
Mm-hmm.
You've been doing some incredibly high-profile work of late, launching football kits, and you've launched football boots as well in the past from Italian brand that I've always wanted to own a pair of.
I know, I'm still waiting for my freebie that never came through. So.
God bless those clients that do send you swag, though.
Well, exactly.
Exactly. Brilliant. So, Phil, just tell us a little bit about who you are, if you could start off.
Yeah, of course. My name's Phil Galloway, and I'm a fine and digital artist, mainly digital at the moment, who is mostly specialising in sport illustration, whether it be reactionary or campaigns or, as you said, launches. And I've been freelance now for, I think this is my fifth year after leaving teaching behind.
Sorry to jump in. Was the teaching in the creative field?
No. Well, it did kind of touch on it in some areas. No, I was a behavioural specialist. I ran behavioural difficulty schools. But in some of the years, I taught art for a GCSE class 1 year. And then with the other, with the school that I ran, I tried to keep it as creative as possible, because there's always an avenue in with kind of hard to reach youngsters. If you sit down next to them and start doodling, and they look over and they go, "Oh, you didn't draw that," you go, "Well, I did," and then you've opened up a dialogue and they get you to draw, whether it's graffiti or footballers or whatever. And so it was always a good, you know, it kind of kept my hand in while I was working, but it also, you know, all I wanted to do was be an artist whilst I was working. So it kind of it was dangling a carrot almost more than that's what I wanted to leave and do.
And for those that do their creative kind of production alongside a full-time role or job at the moment, what point did you get to when you felt like, I can make that step to be doing this full-time now?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for anyone to be in that position, knowing that you want to do, you've got a dream, you've got a passion, and you've got, you know, the talent or not. It's very hard to carry on working within a role, but by that stage I liked working with the kids, but I didn't like the politics behind the actual job. Mm-hmm. And so I was getting very, very frustrated, and so I obviously by that stage I'm a little bit older. I've got by 5 years ago I had two children, one and one on the way, I think, at the time. You know, you've got a mortgage, you've got a dog, you've got responsibilities. So it is a scary prospect to kind of think, oh gosh, I'm going to be leaving this and potentially have no income. So what I did, rather than just be completely cavalier and gung-ho, I started trying to build up as many contacts and as many little jobs as I could, that by the time I'd actually decided to, there you go, I'm handing in my notice, I'm leaving, I'd already done quite a bit of work with Microsoft, with Nokia Lumia. I'd been involved in some viral videos with them, and also had made the contact with Mundial magazine, and that was all before actually leaving. So there was a crossover. I was doing work, I was coming in from work at you know, well after 5-6 years, you know, driving back over from Macclesfield, and then getting the kids sorted to bed and doing all the other chores, and then working hard at night to try and make this other life that I was starting to moonlight as the main one. So for anyone kind of wanting to take that leap, if you land a plum job and you think it's all set up, then go for it. But I think in my position particularly, you have to be a little bit more considered in that jump. And I could have fallen flat on my face. I've been very, very fortunate this last 5 years of everyone I've met and the support of other illustrators like your good self. And so, yeah, it's a tough one, but it was one that I think I'd have been at the end of my tether by now if I hadn't have jumped. I wouldn't have been able to continue. I don't know what I'd be doing now if I hadn't have jumped that day.
Yeah. And would you, just looking back, would you say, or is there an example of one job that you can look back and think that piece of work really did something for me to either get my profile raised or that piece of work led to this? Because I always find when people kind of ask me how do you get work, how that it happens, I always say the simplest thing is to fill your portfolio with work that you would like to do. And precisely, then people will contact you to say, can we have our version?
Can we have that? This is something that I kind of learned quite early on. And I'm from my partner's dad, who was a very keen kind of savvy businessman when he was alive, about, like you say, keeping yourself busy by creating your own projects. Mm-hmm. And so early on, I'd been spotted by Microsoft, like doing finger paintings on a mobile phone. That's how it started. It was literally that simple. And the kind of profile was being raised, but not in the sporting world in the slightest. But I started doing a few drawings of like Raheem Sterling and a few other manager kind of in the very simplistic, loose, painterly style. And I suppose the one that kind of broke me into the arena that we're talking about now, the kind of sporting and football world predominantly, was I'd followed Mundial magazine, Sam Diss and the lads at Mundial for quite a while. I always thought that they were pretty cool guys, and I liked the kind of the first edition of their magazine. And I saw them just randomly tweet out that they were looking for contributors and writers and artists. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought, well, you know, I've built up this body of projects like you see and things that I'd like to kind of see on social media. So I wasn't scared that I had nothing to show. And I just got in touch and emailed them a few illustrations and images. And they came back to me. And initially it was to do a Robbie Fowler, the famous kind of goal line snorting celebration. It was to do an illustration of that. And for whatever reason, that fell through. And I was a bit gutted. I thought, oh, there's my chance. Gone. That's it.
Did they know you were a Red before they contacted you?
No, not. I mean, like I had about, you know, 4 family members following me on Twitter and a few people from the Microsoft world and the kind of mobile phone world who'd seen my stuff on these adverts. But in terms of sporting stuff, like, there was no presence at all. And I think it was just happen chance that it was a Robbie Fowler piece. And so I was dead keen on it. And when it fell through, I was really gutted. And I remember for the next couple of weeks, nothing much happened and I was still doodling away. And bless them, Sam got back in touch. And I remember I was walking the dog outside and he just said, we've got an idea for a front cover of the magazine. Your style might suit it. And he said, do you know anything about Baroque art and particularly Caravaggio? And I was like, right. Yeah, I did most of my master's degree on it. So, and so as soon as he heard that, it clicked. And that then developed into their young Totti holding old Totti's head for the Mundial cover, which I think that's the pivotal moment in my kind of sporting illustration career, that not only did it completely put me out there to a whole massive audience of people, but from there, I was involved in the BT Sport Champions Draw stuff with you and a couple of years, and that only came about because someone saw the Mundial cover, you know. So after that, you know, the more work you get, the more work you get, which is very, very grateful. But it was that one that started the snowball effect, if you will.
Okay, fantastic. And in terms of the time it takes you to produce a piece of work, and it's funny that's often the first question you're asked by someone contacting you new for the first time, and your instant response is always, well, tell me what the brief is, and I can base my estimates from there. But as someone who does a very different look and feel to yourself, I always imagine the level, with the level of detail and just crafting that it goes into your work. Can you talk us through generally how long a piece of work might take? So if I just jump on your site at the moment, actually, here's a perfect example. So the FA Cup final work that you had this year, you had some inside the program, was that right?
It was last year's one, actually, with I've got it up here as well, the Raheem Sterling, with the little Raheem Sterling walking to that one, you mean?
Sorry, did you not have some work in this year's cover? Sorry, no, program.
It was for the winner's illustration this year.
Oh, sorry, yes.
I did the Arsenal and the Chelsea kind of alternate versions this year. Last year, I did the winner's one. And then Sterling and, who was the other lad? Troy Deeney in the magazine. So, I mean, like you say, it depends on the brief. And some clients want a slightly looser, kind of more painterly effect, which can be done quite fast, because you can be quite expressive, you're not as defined. Uh-huh. Others want them to be very, very kind of almost photorealistic, where they're in a scene or you know, whatever it might be.
Does that tend to be, when you get a brief, is it often prescriptive in terms of, could you apply this art direction or this look and feel, or is it often yourself who will say, this type of art direction would be ideal for it? Or is it a bit of a, it depends?
A bit of both, really. It varies. Okay. I mean, quite a lot of clients will come to me with a piece of work that they've seen of mine saying, we want something like in this style, like this. So a lot of the work I do for like the basketball in America, so they will often come with a couple of things off my website that they really like, and they go, really love this style. Or and it's not always the same style, but so some of the, they might pick a more looser one or a more detailed one or a more cartoony one or whatever. Well, not really cartoony too much, but you know what I mean, a freer, loose style. So that kind of gives me a bit of direction. And then other kind of artistic directors kind of come along and are very open to just discuss it with you and say, what do you think would work? And so the stuff I did for the Aussie Rules, which I really enjoyed that project because I was allowed to be a lot more expressive, and I didn't think I'd go for it at first, because the brief was just realistic portraits of Aboriginal kind of the players, but that was it. And so I just thought the project would suit a more looser style, and when they saw the initial concept sketch of it, and they were like, oh, this is exactly what we want. And so it completely depends, really. And you know, I'm happy to do whatever style the client wants. If they want it really, really detailed, obviously you've got to be kind of realistic on time, because you know, the really realistic stuff where you're going into every eyelash, and that will take you more than an evening. But a lot of the stuff that I do for the reactionary stuff, the likes of Bleacher Report or BT Sport, often I'll only get an evening, a day and a night, really, to turn it around. So I wouldn't want to blow those ones up to, you know, the size of a billboard in terms of detail, but they serve their purpose on social media handsomely, and they can be blown up pretty big. But given, you know, a couple of days or a week or two, so like with the Norwich kit launch, that went on a nice period of months where I could, anytime I had downtime on other jobs, I could concentrate on it and really chip away at it and get the look right and get the detail in. So it completely depends. And I'll always ask, you know, when do they need it by? I'm happy to work through the night if they need it really, really quick.
Yeah. And there's both the Norwich kit launch and the Arsenal kit launch for this new season, produced by your good self. So two real fantastic briefs to come your way. And was it, did they both come in at the same time? Because I'm assuming there was planning and prep, you know, something overnight as such.
They didn't happen at the same time, actually, at all. Norwich, the lovely team at Norwich with Gavin Beard there, they got in. I've done a few pieces for them on social media, on Instagram before, and they got in touch, 4 months ago, 3 or 4 months ago. It was quite a while ago. It might have been right at the beginning of lockdown even, about the potential of this kind of project coming up. And they kind of described roughly what they had in their head, but it was very, very early. And we had a great kind of conference call where we were all kind of pitching ideas of what could happen. And they had these great ideas of, a violinist in the middle, and initially a spotlight was going to pick out them out, and there was going to be like a kind of Baroque gallery. And it was fantastic. And I was swept up in it straight away because it was right up my street. And as soon as they said Baroque portraiture and this kind of stuff. But they were really open for me to kind of experiment and try it. And so we wanted to get the look and feel bang on. So I had the time to work at that. And obviously during lockdown, there was periods where there wasn't as much work possibly, although I was actually quite busy throughout it all. There was pockets. And so they very kindly sent out a kit to me months before anyone had seen it, just because I needed to see how it would look in different lights and get the, because it's quite a strange yellow. And it was a nice project because they were really, really open to kind of suggestions, but also it just had the time to breathe and not rush. And so the kind of the final result, it was nice to see the fans kind of really warm to it and see that we were trying to do something a bit different. Now, whereas the Arsenal one was really enjoyable, but completely from conversely, because it was quick and it had to be quick. Okay. Now I'd said after the Norwich and after all the FA Cup, and I'd just done one for FIFA, that I'd said to my partner, I promised my partner I was going to take a week or two off because I hadn't had much time off. And I thought at the end of lockdown, before the kids go back to school, but I always kind of give the caveat, unless it's someone I've not worked with, like or a really cool project. Mm-hmm. And I've never worked with Adidas before. I remember they contacted me, and my friend, one of my friends was over with his kids, and I was umming and ahhing, and he could see that I didn't know whether to take it or not. And then as soon as I read the brief, I got down to the bottom of it, and I was like, yes, I'm all in on this. And well, you know, the kind of placing Kieran Tierney in like a kind of Game of Thrones portrait, and it had me at hello. That was for the four portraits that was produced, although one of them's not really been released, so I can't really speak about that one too much. It was a week and a half, no more, of kind of getting it all out and just to see how they used it in the video. It was such a cool kind of slick production. So that was really exciting.
You find as well that you can get into a nice rhythm when it might seem like, we've got 5 days to turn around a number of pieces of final art. You can find that there's a nice rhythm that you get into and you learn, this worked on this execution, I'm going to feed some of that
precisely. And sometimes just, painting by the seat of your pants is actually quite exciting. And sometimes the I sound like Bob Ross, but the happy accidents are good. With the Kieran Tierney one particularly, I mean, that was the first one I did of that series. And they had a kind of idea. I'd had a long discussion on the phone with one of the creative directors, Josh, and I kind of could see it in my head. It was just, how was I going to execute it? And that was turned around in one evening for them. And in the morning they saw it, and literally it was just a couple of boot changes and changing the Tesco's bag a little bit, but nothing major. So it was like, right, next one. And, when I was at university, I liked being under pressure. I liked that kind of, you've got a deadline, you've got to get it done. There's no slacking off you go. And I enjoy that.
It's applying that schoolboy thinking of, I don't need to do any revising, I'll do it the night before.
Do it on the night, yeah.
When you get to be an adult, you can understand, that wee bit of pressure can really get you focused.
Yeah, and especially when you know that you might have a few other jobs lined up that week. So I'm kind of quite organised in my head of, I kind of roughly know how long something will take me, roughly. But if I know that I've got a job kind of coming on Thursday, and I'm quite good at kind of just making sure I've got it done, come what may. Yeah. Now the kids have gone back to school, it gets a little bit easier. I've got a lot more time during the daytime. But, my partner's really supportive, and she looks after the kids when I'm really busy. But it's nice that it can be, I don't mind working very, very, odd hours. I quite like getting in the zone with my headphones on late at night and just...
And you work from home... Yourself.
I work from home fully now. I've got my own little little studio which I'm in now, which I'm getting kicked out of in about 3.5-4 months as my new little boy is going to be 6 months. He'll be moving into this, which was the nursery. So now we're looking at extending the house and building a new studio there for me.
Oh, good for you. Well, for those listening today, what I can say is there's a very organised room behind Phil. Lots of white space. There's a very organised, beautiful looking kind of shelving unit. There's almost a full-size Millennium Falcon.
It is original unstickered Millennium Falcon.
It really... That's impressive. I can see your Mo Salah. Actually, can you, the Mo Salah portrait, can you just, I'm just going to go completely off and aside and ask you very specifically about the Liverpool, the portrait of the squad in the Sgt. Pepper album cover style. So is that the print of the full visual on the top shelf there?
That's actually the magazine. That's just the magazine. That wasn't the print. I need to noise Omar up about a print. But I'm sure I can sort one myself. But no, that's the magazine, which, I mean, that was over Christmas. That was an awful lot of work.
Just jumping on, this is an issue of These Football Times.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, it was over last Christmas, the Liverpool edition, which went crazy, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It had so much support for it, especially with the kind of, the year Liverpool were having at the time and subsequently went on to do. So it was, it was a rush job. There was, you know, once the presents were wrapped on Christmas Eve, I went back to drawing, you know, Bruce Grobbelaar and things like that. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. And to see it kind of come out. And again, this was very much won by your seat of your pants. There wasn't much planning. There was however many 40 odd, 50 odd portraits in there. So it was kind of going, who's next, who's next, who's next. But it was quite nice to kind of start piecing them together to try and be as close to the Beatles. I'm a big Beatles geek, so I couldn't, you know, where the black and white photos were on the Sgt. Pepper cover, I've tried to do that. And then I've got Graeme Souness's lovely afro as Marilyn Monroe's hair. So it is thought out, but it was a very exciting project.
And was it your steer to do it as the album cover, or where were the dots connected there?
I think with Omar, I think originally there was talk of it being an Abbey Road cover. And last year I did 3 Abbey Roads for different sports, for the cricket. I did one for Liverpool out in where were they, in Doha, in the World Club Cup tournament, and I think I did one for another one as well. And I said to Omar, I was like, oh, I'm kind of fed up doing Abbey Road. Let's go for it and go, let's do Sgt. Pepper. It's the only one to kind of go for, really. You know, with that, otherwise you're limited. I mean, I was looking at, I've got a Revolver album up there, and that's got a lot of faces, but they're very small. So Sgt. Pepper, it's iconic. And I knew it would be a hell of a lot of work. And I knew I was kind of shooting myself in the foot a little bit when I was suggested it. But I was like, oh, I'm happy to do it.
It absolutely fits as well with the kind of standout covers that the publication's known for. I mean, that's just a great platform for that kind of route. And for you, I mean, connecting some dots with Dream Projects, no? Liverpool based and...
Yeah. We're doing the covers for These Football Times has been brilliant, actually, because they've always had... You know, me and Omar have always kind of chatted and had like lots of different ideas, and some of the ones, like, you know, for the Dutch, the kind of tiles that I did for the Netherlands, and I mean that was a complete curveball that I pitched at him, and I said, have you ever heard of a thing called Delft tiles? And that's me going back to my art history kind of geekiness, and I showed him a few things, and I said, look, and I did a drawing of Cruyff on there, and he was like, this is it, this has got to be the cover. And that so it's always quite exciting doing These Football Times cover, because they, you know, Omar's very, very open about your approach and how, you know, how we do it, and so it's good fun.
And without touching on the, well, I'm gonna say, does it mean more to do work that's celebrating the club that you support yourself? And I say, does it mean more knowing that Liverpool have this great campaign where they some of the creative content coming from the club last year, and I believe there's a drive to have Liverpool fans producing that work. So, you know, it does mean more. And is that right for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, it was always, like you say, you have these little goals and these little dreams. And if you'd have said to me a couple of years ago that I'd be producing illustrations, pre-match illustrations for Liverpool, I'd have laughed in your face. There's no way. I mean, it's unbelievably proud as a Liverpool fan to get the opportunity to do that. But conversely, I'm just as proud doing stuff, you know, for like you say, the Norwich and the Arsenal. I've been asked to do all the clubs that, you know, some would say is rival Liverpool. And I've been perfectly, you know, happy, but also really, really proud with the work I've created for it. But I think there is, with the stuff that I've done for the Liverpool Foundation, and when you see kind of players that I idolised when I was a kid, so like, you know, Ian Rush, Robbie Fowler, Patrick Berger, and think, when they're putting your artwork out, it's not so much that I'm more proud of the work. I think I get that boyhood kind of excitement and chibis about it. I mean, I'm never going to be good enough to play for Liverpool. And, you know, I think if the opportunity ever came to kind of kick a ball about at Anfield, I would literally do terrible things to get that opportunity.
Scott McCoy has done that, hasn't he?
Don't talk to me about Scott. And, you know, it's Scott with his deft back heel, and he set up a beautiful goal. I love Scotty to bits, but I'm so jealous of it. And so, if anyone's from Liverpool's listening, please, you know, make it happen. But it's that kind of excitement, I think, that kind of just takes it up a little bit of a notch. You know, I'm proud of all my work, but I must say that it's. When Jamie Carragher's putting your work out and stuff like that, it's fun, definitely.
Yeah. And do you play much yourself now?
I do. I still play sevens every Monday night. I've been headhunted to play for an 11s team. They obviously, I don't know, mustn't have many good defenders. They come and ask me.
I was just about to ask if you could describe yourself as a player.
Oh, I'm a marauding wing back. That's
really?
Yeah, I was talking on another podcast the other day, and I was talking about, I used to be a goalkeeper, and I know you're a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And I was, I know it's not good on audio, but I was showing my old Grobbelaar goalkeeper shirt.
That's a beaut.
Which is an absolute perler. That's 89-90. Yeah. Which my daughter wears now. She loves it. And I always dreamt of being a goalkeeper. I loved it. I loved flinging myself around, tipping it round. And me and my dad used to play outside, and he used to ping free kicks at me. But I'm not exactly the tallest chap. And as I got older, the nets just suddenly just started kind of getting a bit out of reach for me. And so I decided I was quite fast, and I like defending. I like that kind of role. So I play now left back for my sevens team. And if I play 11s, I'm generally a left back, but I'm a right footed, cutting inside.
It's funny that, so the one season I had playing outfield for a team was as right back for Woodall Spa. Right. And it was at the time of, I can't remember the exact season, but it was in the 90s, and it was when Paolo Maldini was very front of mind. And I remember getting the same Nike boots, well, obviously the lower level that he wore. But I remember wearing those boots for that one season that I played as a right back for Woodall Spa. And then I went the opposite direction.
It sticks with you because I used to play for a team called Hale Barnes United, which were like quite a good Sunday league team, and I suppose at their level. And thankfully we had a lot of doctors on the team because there was a lot of injuries and a lot of fouls. But I still wear the number 2 now when I can because of Rob Jones. That's what I mean? Yeah. So it's it kind of sticks with you, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Well, talking of things that stick with you from back in the day, so I'm going to move the subject on to football kits.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're a man that's shown yourself to be more than capable of both promoting football kits and designing them yourself. So can you talk us through the 1874 Northwich kit?
Yeah, that was a strange one to kind of come about. It's the team that my mates in the pub kind of follow. And at the time, there's a few kind of local teams around here. And I always kind of knew of 1874, but I hadn't been to any of the matches. I was in tendency with my friends. But they kind of got in touch with me. I don't quite know how it came about. They've got a really good communications team at 1874. The lads who run the magazine and do all their social media, they're funny and they're really on it, really snappy. And they got in touch with me. And I think they kind of saw an opportunity that, although I'm not massive, I kind of got a few fingers and a few pies. And if one of these pies promoted their kit, then it would be great. And they didn't have many followers. They were quite small. But, you know, very kind of, you know, well supported in the local kind of area. And they got in touch, that Ash got in touch with me there and posed the idea of me designing their away kit, which it's a complete boyhood dream to kind of get to be able to get let loose on it and to do whatever I wanted. And it kind of harks back to when I was a little boy with my mate Mike Pickering, and we used to sit at the back of school, back of class, doodling. I used to make templates, and I'd set him a challenge, you know, in Italia 90, right, you're doing this team and I'm doing this team, and get the felt tips out. So to get the opportunity to do it for a proper club, and they put their trust in me, and it was good. So I built up a brief of the design language that I was trying to use, using the local rivers to create the chevron pattern. Also, I'm a bit of a Hummel fan, so that kind of struck with me. And then there was things from my childhood that I always wanted to get into a kit that I loved about kits when I was young. So I had the old blue and red Ajax kit with ABM AMRO written down the side. And I loved that kind of, it's not a sash, it's not a column, it's just something. So I developed the kind of Tudor pattern into this block down the side of the kit. And it was a crazy kit, and it was very much polarizing. And I think at the club there was mixed voices, and it wasn't just between old and young. It was just maybe modern and more traditional, but God bless them. They realized that it's going to be, it's so polarizing and so controversial, it will get noticed, and noticed it did get. And they got orders from all around the world. And then it started getting ludicrous. It was being written about in the top 100 shirts of all time. Yeah, yeah. And then it's been inducted into the National Football Museum, which blows my tiny mind a little bit, really. Yeah. And I'm hugely proud. I've got mine through there, and I'm, you know, it's like I said, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but it was, I'd probably go a little bit more calm.
Do you wear yours, or is it framed?
I have done. Yeah. And I've played in it. But I just went on Saturday to go and watch a cup game with my mates there at 1874. And there was no prouder feeling than looking around the crowd and seeing grown men with beer guts, young kids, all wearing the kit around the side of the pitch. And they made a pink version of it as well, using the same template. And so you've got loads of grown men, women, kids, everyone wearing the two different versions of it. It's brilliant, and they've got that, they're using it this season again, and so yes, I'm just very, very proud of it. It was an opportunity I didn't think I'd get, and you know, hopefully something like that might come around again. But it, you know, I did it completely in my own time, completely for free for them, just to support, and I'm really happy that I did. I'm so proud that they asked me.
Well, good for you. And can you talk us through the creative process when it comes to the pattern on the shirt itself? So I'll let others go and look at it. I won't try and describe it myself, but there's essentially a surface pattern. So can you talk us through that?
So what I wanted to do was to kind of give a little bit of background of the kind of Norwich, really. So Norwich used to have an old crest, and on that crest was a blue and white wave. Mm-hmm. There was a ship with a blue and white wave. So I knew I wanted to incorporate two different kind of shades of blue, a bit of a white. And the pattern was made up. It's a repeated chevron pattern of two intersecting rivers, essentially. So the River Reaver and the River Wyrander. The River Dane, sorry. And they intersect. And so basically what I did was I made a, which is a bit unusual for me because I don't usually work on Illustrator and things like that. I'm, you know, much more kind of in the painting realm. But it was quite cool to kind of come up with a pattern. So I made a Tudor pattern out of the Tudor buildings in Northwich. There's a lot of black and white Tudor buildings. It's quite a cool little place. And started overlaying them in different kind of hues of blue. So basically that what's now become the kind of bus seat pattern craze of teams, it creates a kind of depth and a texture that when you see it from afar, it's almost like camouflage. But when you see it up close, you can see these kind of structures of V's running through it. And then on top of that, with the kind of, like I said, the white sash that runs down the side in the Tudor in the Tudor pattern, but larger. So it was all, you have to think about it, like I said, how is it going to look on fit athletic lads? How is it going to look on the terraces on probably less athletic lads? How is it going to flow when they're running and also the material? So I was quite hands-on. The printers of it were really cool. And they send me out lots of swatches and I could mess about with colours and see what would work together. Yeah. It was a really interesting process that I didn't know a thing about. And to some people, maybe that shows, but it was a learning curve that I'd love to be involved in again. It was really, really cool. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I'm going to put you on the spot now. Actually, this isn't putting you on the spot because you knew this question was coming. So give us a bit of an insight to what football kits you like yourself. So favourite kit of all time, doesn't have to be one you've owned. And actually football boots as well, please.
So my favourite kit of all time, again, this won't work on audio, but I can describe it, is, and it has to be, because it's got a backstory to it, but as well, but I absolutely adore the Fiorentina 92-93 7-Up Lotto kit. Me and my brother had this when we were youngsters, and I remember proudly wearing it round Venice, which was very, very much not the done thing at the time. Yeah. And I was getting a lot of nasty looks, but I wore it proudly. And I just thought it was the time of, you know, 7-Up was really cool. You had Fido Dido with 7-Up, yes, the kind of old character. I loved the kind of the purple. It's just something beautiful about the texture. And we lost it. We lost the shirt. My mum swears blind that she didn't give it to my cousins. We had all a massive box of amazing kits. And we are convinced that she gave them to my cousins in Ireland. And this was one of the, I rescued a few, but this was one of the ones that went. So my brother, lovely lad that he is, very kindly for my last birthday, managed to find an original one on eBay last year.
Oh, he's a good one.
Dread to think how much he paid for it, but he's a good one. So that would be, it's just the pattern work in it is so cool because it's noticeable, but yet from a distance, it just looks classy and it's not in your face. And a lot of other teams have tried to mimic it and never quite got there, I think.
And you know what, talking of that subtle surface pattern on it, I always find it difficult to judge a football kit when you see it in a picture on launch. Yeah. You know, I think I always think first off, you need to see it in context. So on the player running around a pitch playing football, because you're going to tie yourself in knots if you're trying to judge creative work out of its context, you know. But also seeing a kit for real in your hands up in front of you, you so often see wee bits of detail that you know the designers have placed
precisely
in there for a reason.
And I think, I mean, although I had other kits when I was young that had like beautifully, I had a Bologna kit and it had this nice beautiful, colour. Yeah, woven badge. It was, and this doesn't have that kind of level of finesse. And I suppose I like it all the more for that reason, that it's just kind of, it's so kind of in your face, brave. It's almost like it didn't need any more to it. And obviously the team at the time with Battistuta and all that, it was just a good period, you know what I mean, of Italian football. So that for me, I mean, there's loads of other kits that I've really, really liked, but I think just I've always liked the kind of the colours of Fiorentina, and it's always been my kind of second team, although recently we both just bought the new Inter Milan which is a lovely shirt.
It is. So. But how you were describing the Fiorentina shirt then, I always think there's two strands to your favourite football kit. There's the emotive choice,
yes,
which can be based on a certain season, a certain match, a certain player, yes, or a certain period from your own life. And then there's also the kits that you look at and think, that is a genuinely beautifully designed and visually engaging,
exactly,
football shirt, you know?
Yeah, no, totally. And there's, like I said before, I'm a big fan of Hummel. So the Denmark kit, the kind of famous red and white kind of chevrons within the lines. I mean, that's a technically brilliant kit. I'm trying to think of other ones that I really, really liked. Was it the...
Have you actually seen the Hummel Christiana shirts? I might have got the name wrong, but you know, just outside of Copenhagen, there's a region called Christiana.
Right.
And Hummel have... So they have a football team. And if you haven't seen the Hummel Christiana football shirt, I will send it to you after this. Oh, it's basically a bit of a slightly more rainbow-coloured version of the classic Denmark kit. You are.
I think I do know this. Yeah, almost send it to me, but I'm pretty sure I do. Yes, I think I do know this. But yeah, there's something quite cool about that. And then, you know, there's kits that kind of get a lot of bad rep, which I actually quite like as well. I mean, there's, you know... I'm trying to just kind of veer not just on the Liverpool ones, because obviously Liverpool, like you say, Liverpool ones are always kind of a bit more emotive, but they've had some shockers as well. But I'm trying to think now which ones I really, really liked. I mean, I was a big fan of, even though I remember Mexico 86 a little bit, Italia 90 particularly, but I feel that... Although there were some belting kits in those things, I felt for pure fun, USA was brilliant. Like, absolutely brilliant for kits. So you had the wavy American kind of blue and white stripe, the red and white stripes, and the blue one with the stars across them. I think for kind of brashness, it was quite good. But then I had the Jürgen Klinsmann German white shirts with the kind of the German flag kind of flecked down the shoulders. I really liked that, again, because it said everything it needed to, without being kind of ridiculous. It had the German flag on it. It had a Germanic font, but not too. It was cool and it looked great across the shoulders and the structure of it. It made them look like giants, kind of. It was brilliant.
It was a real it's a real Adidas kit World Cup for me, USA 94. They're the shirts that I really remember.
No, definitely. There was a few good ones there, yeah.
Yeah. And football boots. Let's talk about football boots for a moment.
See,
so,
I am,
what do you wear yourself?
This is it. I am a complete, although I am garish in some respects, I am a complete traditionalist in football boots. I wear copper mundials, and that's it. I love them. They're my favourite. I love the silhouette of them. I love looking back at old photos of classic players wearing them. I like a simple black boot. And I think I'm of the generation that if I remember one lad turning up in white boots, and he got snapped within about 2 minutes against a big burly lad from Stoke. Or so, you know, it just went straight through him. And that to me, I was like, that's not me. That's me not wearing a pair of white boots then. And I think it was so unusual to get coloured boots when I was a teenager that you kind of, there was, you know, the Adidas World Cups, there was Copa Mundials, then the Predators started coming in. I always found Predators quite neat and narrow on my feet, although I do like the look of them.
I am a Predator
in
man.
Terms of, I don't know whether I've got wide feet or what, but they've never agreed with me. And I had a pair of, what do they call, T50s, or the ones with the kind of, where you could screw the studs out of Adidas.
Okay,
ones.
Yeah. Yeah,
And they were really expensive. I found them and on a deal, and they were horrible. Like to pass in, they were just like a horrible boot. So I always keep coming back to the kangaroo leather, the slippers of Copa Mundial. But in terms of, I think, aesthetic, I think that the first Craig Johnson Predator, the first iteration of it with the real blade kind of cut into it, and it looked completely alien. That for, I remember watching a program about it when I was a kid and just thought that this is the most exciting thing to happen to football in years.
Yeah.
And I always imagine myself kind of pinging beautiful free kicks in the top corner with them and never really doing that.
And then talking of boots, so you have, as well as promoting football kits, you have also worked on boot campaigns. Can you talk us through, I might say this a wee bit wrong here, because I'm never sure. I pronounce it wrong
every time. Yeah, it's hard.
Pantofolo Loro,
the Super Leggera Blanco, I think was the ones, without having to look at my website, I think I remember. It was a strange one. Lee Moore got in touch. Got in touch about being involved, and he wanted a very kind of traditional still life, really, in a kind of Rembrandt-esque. And he had a few images, and I showed him a few images of what I thought could work. And did a few thumbnail painting things, but they were, I got sent them out to kind of use as a still life and lit it in my room and everything. And they were beautiful, very light leather boots. But it was nice to paint something other than faces, but still in that same Baroque chiaroscuro sfumato kind of light on it. And
I guess it was, for you, that's a still life challenge.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, and I don't often get the chance to do stuff like that, and to be able to kind of light it here, so I can kind of set up a rudimentary kind of little area where I could light the shoes from one end and have black out the background, and it was really, really nice, because you know I am an art historian, I love art history, and whenever I kind of get the chance to kind of use older techniques, or as much as you can do in digital, I suppose. But it was a really cool thing. And hopefully, I mean, the way they used it in the video was really classily done. And I was dead proud of that project, actually, because it was the first, like you say, brand kind of actual product that I'd kind of created for. It was a cool one.
Oh, good for you. And did you get to keep the boots?
No, I was meant to. I was told I would. I'm going to have to go and chat to Lee again about it. It's only a couple of years ago. I'll have to noise him
up. That'll be fresh in mind, yeah.
Yeah, I hope he's not the same size 8 as me and he's Adam himself.
you touched on, when we were talking about the 1874 kit, that you were working a wee bit in Adobe Illustrator on that brief. Can you talk us through, from a technical point of view, how you work and what software and what kit you use?
Well, I'm a little bit different, I suppose, than maybe... I've not seen anyone else working in the sports industry using the products I do, so maybe I should keep it under wraps. But I work predominantly on a Windows platform. Mm-hmm. So I have a Surface Studio big tablet kind of touch screen, lovely. It's the Surface Studio 2, and it kind of folds down into a drawing table. It's absolutely gorgeous to use. And I, with the stylus, use a program called ArtRage on it, ArtRage 6 and ArtRage 5, because they've both got pros and cons. And essentially ArtRage, I was kind of shown onto it. I used to use a program called, what was it called? Fresh Paint on Windows, which kind of recreated paint really nicely, but it was limited by the resolutions that you could export and the size of canvas that you could do and layers and all that kind of stuff. So I was put onto ArtRage by an illustrator who I was doing work with for Microsoft. This was 5-6 years ago. And as soon as I tried it, it blew my mind. It is literally, you put paint on canvas or whatever texture you've laid down, and it wrinkles and is malleable, and you can push it around with your thumb and you can create texture underneath it and light it so that you can see the bubbles of the paint and the kind of the creases in the oil. And it has, you know, pastel on there, which is pretty decent, and pencils, which is pretty decent, and watercolors. But there's other apps and other programs that have done those things better. But for paint, I just don't think there's any better. And you can... like I said, you can really get close to a proper oil portrait, especially if you follow kind of the techniques. You can use washes, you can add thinner to it, you can work with a dirty brush on it. It's really cool. And if you follow those, you have to kind of follow the basic kind of rules, I suppose, of painting. And because if you start blending willy-nilly or adding strange colors, it will go unusual and it will end up being black if you just keep adding stuff to it and going crazy. So you've got to respect it on there. And so that's the main one that I use. And then sometimes I'll bring the image onto my iPad Pro and use Procreate for some lighting effects or some kind of particle effects if it's something a little bit more fantastical. And so those are the two kind of main ones that I use. But there's a few other ones that are on the horizon that I've been testing out. And I wrote a review on another program called Adobe Fresco, which is part of the Creative Cloud one, which is more for like watercolors and stuff. It's beautiful. It's an amazing stuff. But I've not really found a way of utilizing it in my flow yet. So, but Art Rage is predominantly, and what I like about it is, my brain doesn't really work in a kind of digital way. Whenever I use Photoshop to draw on, I hate it. I just, my brain doesn't correlate with the key commands and with, it seems really alien to me. But whereas when I've used Art Rage, it's literally pick up, there's the pencil, put it on, and that's it. And away with you. You know, you're sketching.
Is it as close to a real physical brush on canvases as you feel that you get?
In terms of the effect you get, yes. In terms of the actual application, then maybe no. On the iPad, I've got one of the paper-like screen protectors on.
Yeah.
Which does feel like you are writing on paper or drawing on paper. It's quite clever. And even the noise of it sounds a bit kind of scratchy with the Apple pencil. And you can, it gives a little bit of tooth to the screen. Now, I used to use a Surface laptop, which was killing my eyes. I loved it as a machine, but as the projects got bigger and I was working on a smaller screen, I knew I had to kind of upgrade. And Microsoft have been hugely supportive with me and looked after me very, very handsomely. But the screen on the small one felt more glassy. On this big one, with the right, you can change your nibs to kind of suit your style, whether it's a 2B or a HB or a plastic. So you've got a little bit more bite on the screen. And in terms of, you know, on the big screen, if you're doing loose and you can hold your stylus at the end like a paintbrush and just feather it in, and yeah, it's as close as you can get without splattering the wall in paint and getting in trouble.
I've always wondered with your work, do you feel, I don't know, this might be a deep question to throw at you right now, but do you feel somewhat of a responsibility or an importance to celebrate the art movements of the past, because you put them in a real life context? And so that makes those past art movements and disciplines accessible to a modern audience, because they're able to see it in application, maybe outside of a gallery that they have to go and visit. And it's an important thing, though, because you're keeping art history relevant.
Yeah. No, I think, I mean, I've got massive, you know, art history's always been a big part of me and my partner's life. We're both art historians. That's where we met. I've got a love of kind of old movements and old styles, which, you know, it didn't seem to me that it just wanted to be a kind of a cheesy pastiche of something. If I'm going to do a Baroque or a Mannerist one, I'll do it properly. You know what I mean? I'll try and do it as properly as I can. You see kind of some kind of companies and stuff like that I've kind of mimicked, but not in a kind of loving way, in an almost kind of mawkish kind of way. And I'm hopeful that my stuff, when I get the opportunity to actually do it in a style, isn't kind of just, you know, pandering to it. It's actually kind of an appreciation of it. And if that kind of love of attention and the style, if that gets kind of people who might not, like you say, might not be exposed to that kind of art, they may not know that style, to kind of think, oh, well, I really like that. If that opens up doors, then that's brilliant. I mean, the number of football fans who kind of got in touch and stuff and said, like, what's this based on? Or what is this style? I mean, that's quite warming. It's quite nice to kind of hear that there is that interest. And because, like, I suppose Sports Illustrated has become so big, there is an interest in every single detail of it. And
yeah,
I suppose because mine harks back to history, if people want to learn that a little bit more, and you know, I'm always very open at explaining it and as best I can. Yeah.
Oh, good for you. And so looking ahead to the upcoming season, how excited are we for this 2020-21 season?
I am. I'm very excited. I want to kind of get back to a bit more normality with it all, and hopefully we can do. I mean, there's a lot of Liverpool fans and stuff like that are a bit concerned about lack of signings and things like that. I'm not too worried in that respect, but I think it's going to be a lot closer this season.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful there'll be lots of interesting kind of projects kind of coming up on the horizon because of the big rivalries with all Chelsea's these signings, and, you know, who knows what United are going to be pulling out the bag, and, you know, everyone's doing business. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It should be good. It's nice to just have sport back, you know, and properly. And, you know, once some fans can get in the stadium a little bit more, then, you know, I think everyone, you know, fingers crossed, if everyone stays safe and everything, then that's brilliant.
Absolutely. And you're back playing yourself Monday 7th.
Back playing, yes, yes.
Good for you.
We'll see how that pans out. Hopefully I can stay injury-free and
look after
my old bones.
Yeah, I'll be wishing you stay injury-free. I can say that to you for sure.
Well, that's it.
Yeah. So just finishing off, I'm going to put you on the spot again. So dream project. If you were to just think right now on the spot about, I would love to do that. You don't have to say the specific client or...
Yeah. I think
kind of piece.
I'd love to do like a big full campaign where I've been involved in kind of every element, you know, for big billboards. And you see there's a few of the lads do kind of projects where they mock it up to look like it's on. I know Dave Flanagan's done some beautiful stuff as if it was for like Nike and
like minimal figures. Yeah.
Yeah. Lovely stuff like that. And now I'd love to do something very kind of elaborate and grand and almost kind of Liberace-esque across a huge scale, you know, where it's just an explosion of colour and paint and loose brush strokes and really kind of getting my teeth into the style of art that I really, really like doing. As much as I love the reactionary kind of tight stuff where it has to look like them, I really enjoy the looser stuff. That's like where I'm kind of, you know. So I think I've got a few ideas in my head of kind of what I'd like to do, and I want to experiment a little bit more. And I suppose it will see whether kind of companies kind of come on board with it and whether they see it as something. But I think generally a big campaign would be lovely. Again, just to say I've kind of done it, I think that's another kind of notch to kind of get up there a little bit more. And then in terms of just kind of where moving forward, I suppose, is pushing my own style, like I said, to kind of see what else I can do and what else, where it can go a little bit further. And you know, I don't feel I've kind of used all my aces yet. I feel I can develop more, hopefully. I've got a few ideas I've started writing a little illustrated children's book about sport, about my dad and me relationship with football and him watching me. And this is the first time I've ever mentioned it, actually. So when he hears this, he'll be very either flattered or or disgusted by it. I don't know. I don't even know whether I'm going to illustrate that one. I don't know whether my style is right for it, but I'd like to kind of do a little bit more on that. And I'd also like to, you know, I'm not, none of us are massive big cheeses, but if I can do a little bit more stuff to help, I used to do work for charities within the school setting. And if I can do a little bit more for charity work this year, I always try and help out as much as I can. But if I can do other projects this year, then that's always really important to me as well.
Fantastic. And can you let people know where they can find you online?
Yeah, you can find me on my website at philgallowaydraws.co.uk. My Instagram is also philgallowaydraws. And then just to completely throw you off the scent as a curveball, my Twitter is filthyart. And that's P-H-I-L-T-H-Y. A-R-T.
Fantastic. And I highly recommend everybody to follow Phil in any possible way you can. So Phil, I'd like to say thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Incredibly insightful to hear more about yourself and your work and your process. And I encourage everybody to go and look at all the beautiful goodness you produce. So thanks again for your time.
Say hello. Thank you very much. Cheers, Marcus.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.